Well, in some ways, we're going to revisit something this morning that we've talked about before. But then again, just about everything we're doing in church, we've done at least once before, especially if you've been here for as long as some of you have. And some of you have been going to church for longer than I've been alive, and certainly a lot longer than you've been listening to me. So there's no real surprise that we get the occasional bit of repetition. But I figure if the Bible puts something in there more than once, it's probably because there's a good chance we need to hear it more than once, and maybe didn't get it at all the first time we came across it. And this morning, what we're going to be revisiting is what we first encountered in James, and that wasn't even all that very long ago. But there's good reason to come back to this whole idea of asking. And the last time we talked about it came out of the context of the James statement, where James tells us that you don't have any wisdom because you've never asked for it. And there's just something about people, certainly in our culture and really in all cultures, it seems, that makes it difficult for us to ask. Now, maybe this is more difficult for men. Possibly, I don't know. But it certainly seems to be difficult for all of us to ask when we need things, which is too bad, because expecting people to read your mind, well, it just doesn't work all that well, at least not in my experience. People very seldom read my mind, except when I don't want them to. And in which case, I suspect they're not reading my mind, but more reading my face when it comes down to it. But when we look at our gospel reading, and we encounter Bartimaeus, who's a very, very interesting character. Jesus and his disciples are coming into Jericho. There's this big crowd, and Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, is outside the city, which is where most beggars were. That way you could get people coming and going. You could interact with people who had never seen you before, who might be more inclined to take pity upon you, I suppose. And if you got people going in before they spent their money, or coming out after they made their money, you had a better chance of receiving something of value. So Bartimaeus was begging at the side of the road, and he heard somehow that it was Jesus of Nazareth. And he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Which is interesting for all kinds of reasons, not least of which that in the book of Mark, this is the only time the messianic title, Son of David, is used by someone other than Jesus and directed towards Jesus. Bartimaeus may have been a blind beggar, but he certainly understood that there was something unusual about Jesus, that there was something special about him. And he started calling out to him. And as is so often the case, many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, trying to avoid a scene. We don't want a scene. We don't want somebody shouting when they shouldn't be shouting. Although my impression has always been that Bartimaeus was a long way away from Jesus. They talk about a large crowd, so he was presumably at least on the outskirts of the crowd, so who knows how far away he was, so he had to shout. But the people around him said, "Be quiet. Just stop it." So he shouted all the more, and Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." Well, this all begins with Bartimaeus coming to a couple of conclusions. The first is that he needs something, and the second is that Jesus can provide it. And he begins this process of asking here. Our sermon title is, well, I like it. It's not, impossibly clever, but it gets a hold of something that I think is of value. This whole idea of ask and answer. And usually we don't put those two together, but you'll see why we do, especially here. And as I was talking to Graceland before, sometimes asking just begins the process of coming to what it is that we actually need. So Jesus stops, calls him. And I've always liked this next little bit. Mark has a sense of humor because he says, "So they called to the blind man, 'Cheer up! On your feet, he's calling you.'" Well, why does he need to cheer up? Because these people telling him to cheer up were the people who were just telling him to shut up and stop causing a problem. Oh, the fickleness of crowds, I guess. So he throws his cloak aside, jumps to his feet, and comes to Jesus. And Jesus asks him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And this is where we get into the second part of the sermon title and the second part of this whole idea. We frequently ask for things, And then we just leave it there. But sometimes, if we are going to ask for something, we've asked for something that's so broad, that's so impossible to define, that it really doesn't do us any good. And the person we've asked whatever it is needs to ask questions of their own. And that's why, when I was talking to Gracelyn, who, with the brilliance that all children seem to possess, said, when your mother calls you in and says, it's time for supper, what do you want for supper, or what do you want for lunch, or what do you want for snack, or whatever else it is, it's important that you answer. When do we lose that? When do we get to that age as adults where we no longer answer that second question? Sometimes we don't even answer the first question or ask the first question. One of the ongoing frustrations, as I shared with you before, is having some idea of what somebody needs, being fairly certain that you can meet that need, but not getting them to actually ask for it. And I think it is a cultural thing as much as anything, because little kids are pretty good about telling you what they want. It's when they get older, when we get older, that we tend not to ask. We just think people should know. Or we ask for things in such a way that they're just not useful. Bartimaeus, I suppose, when Jesus said, what do you want me to do for you? He could have said, whatever you want. Just do something nice for me. He could have said, I want to be a more successful beggar. He could have said all kinds of things. But he answered the question with what he actually needed. One of the reasons why God asks us these questions is not because he doesn't know, but because for us, going through the process of determining what it is that we actually need is sometimes the biggest part of the answer that we subsequently receive. People ask all kinds of things from God. And in the same way that children ask for bicycles, there's often more involved. Many children have prayed for bicycles, asked for bicycles for Christmas or their birthday or whatever else. And if you ever take the time to ask sort of what's going around there, you'll realize that it's more than just the possession of a bicycle, because they don't want a bicycle just to sit in the garage so they know where it is, so they can go and look at it, so they can walk to school and tell people what a great bike they have at home. When children ask for a bicycle, what they're asking for is the beginning of a process of independence, of movement, speed. They can get to their friend's house quicker, to school and home again quicker. There's all kinds of things that are going on with a bicycle. And it's the same for us as we get older. I've been around people frequently who have prayed for money. They need more money. And if you take the time to talk to them, you realize that no, it's not money that they're needing. What they need is security. What they need is a sense of prosperity. What they need is an outward sign that they are being blessed by God. And if you can answer the question in more than just the simplistic first thing that pops into your mind, you may then be in a position to realize that you don't really need anything at all. What you need is to change how you're looking at things. Now, Bartimaeus needed a particular thing. He needed to be able to see. But we can barely help people who can't see now with all the pieces of technology we have and all the rest. Being blind is tremendously difficult. I've never been blind even for a moment, but I've known people who were blind. And it's a difficult life to live. Can you imagine what it was like a couple of thousand years ago? When you didn't have crosswalks that chirp to let you know it's safe, like we do now? When you couldn't get books to be read for you on a machine or whatever else it might be. Bartimaeus needed to see. And with his ability to see, he got all those other things as well. Independence. The opportunity to work in a way that is more dignified than begging, and all kinds of other things. We don't often need that kind of thing. Often what we need is a different way of looking. If we ask God for money because we want security, what our answer might be is not winning a lottery. Whatever you think of lotteries is kind of immaterial, or having somebody leave you a surprise inheritance of some sort. What we may need is a revision of what we think makes us secure, and an opportunity to realize again that God is the ultimate source of our security. That we don't need more money. What we need is a realization that God cares enough for us that we are going to be secure. I was telling the folks at Knox, I've known people who wanted more money because they liked giving things to people. They wanted more so they could give it away, and that's a wonderfully noble thing. But if what you want to do is give to people, does it have to be money? What about volunteering? What about giving people your time? What about giving people things, physical things that you no longer need? If your desire is to be generous to people, that doesn't only mean money. And sometimes it's simply a matter of looking at what we already have and rethinking what that means for what we desire. But we'll never get there if we don't answer the second question. We ask God for what we want, or what we think we want, or we ask God for his attention, whatever it might be, and then sometimes through scripture, sometimes through someone else, there are many different ways we can get this next question, but the next question is asked. And sometimes when we answer it, you know, maybe this never happened to you, but I can remember answering my parents' questions off and on, and they made no response other than just to look at me. And I knew when that happened that my response was inadequate in one way or another. Occasionally it was inadequate. Well, where were you last night? Sometimes it was inadequate because it was lacking in truthfulness. But sometimes it just didn't make any sense, and they needed more. Well, sometimes I think we go to prayer, and we say, God, are you there? You're there. Terrific. I need whatever it is. And I think God just sort of looks at us the same way my parents did, with a sort of expectant sense that, yes, we know that there's more to this, and we know that you know it, even if you don't know it. So think a little bit, what is it that you actually want? And when you start asking for what you actually want and what you actually need, what you receive is much more satisfying. If you ask for money when what you need is security, you will never have enough. That's just the way it is. You're asking for the wrong thing. If you ask somebody out on a date not to be together with them, but because you're lonely, that might not do what it needs to. You need to know what it is that you actually need, what you actually want, what you actually require, before you can ask someone for it and have any chance of receiving it. So when you ask God or anyone, and they ask you perhaps, well, what do you mean by that? Don't think they're just being dense. Because maybe what they want to know is what you actually mean by that. We have a culture that asks questions we don't want the answer for all the time. How are you doing? Sometimes people want to know, but often they don't. It's a substitute for hello, and I realize that, you know, you should take it for what it actually is. But where did the question, how are you doing, become a meaningless question? If you want to say hello, say hello. We already have a perfectly good word for that that doesn't ask any questions. Hello. If you're so inclined, you can try it, not on anybody here now because they've been warned, when somebody asks, how are you doing, tell them. You know, don't go into exhaustive and unpleasant detail if you're not feeling well, but just tell them exactly what's going on and see how long it takes them for their eyes to glaze over. When Jesus asks, how are you doing? He really wants to know. And when you ask him for something and he says, oh, are you sure that's what you want? He's not setting you up somehow. It's not a trick. It's an opportunity to think about what it is you really, really need. And then ask for that. When we talked about this last time in James, when we didn't have wisdom because we didn't ask, this is a broader idea. If you don't have what you need, what you actually require, maybe you've never actually asked for it. And maybe you need to practice thinking about what it is what you actually need and how to describe it and how to explain it. And sometimes you may discover in the asking that you already have it. I've got 3 kids. Many of you have had more kids than that. You know what it's like. You've got siblings, you've had parents, you know the struggle that can be there. I'm not holding myself up as a paragon or throwing myself under a bus either. I'm just saying that there are challenges to having kids in your life. And often, when I'm thinking about them and praying about them, I think, oh, I need this. And what I realize is that, no, I don't need that at all. What I need is trust. I don't need more money to give my kids more things. I don't need a bigger house to give them each their own room. What I need is to trust God that he will continue to pour blessing upon blessing on us as he already has. And so I go into prayer asking for something and come out praising for what I already have. It doesn't always work that way. But sure is nice when it does. Because then I'm not waiting for something that I don't need. I'm not looking at God and saying, why didn't you listen to me? He did listen. He listened better than I wanted him to. That's the other thing we used to tell our kids. We said, you know, we do actually listen to you. So when you come back later, and when before you wanted this and now you want that, and we say, but we got you this because you asked for it, it's because we listened to you last time. And if you wanted that, you shouldn't have asked for this in the first place, trying to soften us up for whatever you were doing. God really listens. But he's not going to answer the first thing you ask if that's not what you actually need. And especially not if that's not what you actually want. You don't have to soften God up. You don't have to ask him for a little thing hoping he gives you more. When you get his attention through prayer, through your time at church, through whatever it is, he says, well, what would you like? Think for a minute and then ask. Answer the question and see what happens. It doesn't always work as dramatically as it did with Bartimaeus. But Bartimaeus received what he asked for when he answered Jesus' question. And so can we. Amen.